This is Speaking of Faith, First Person. This online exclusive is part of Repossessing Virtue, an ongoing series in which we search for fresh ways to think and talk about the current economic crisis. I'm Kate Moose, managing producer of Speaking of Faith. Here, I speak with Rabbi Elliot Dorf of the American Jewish University in Los Angeles. Rabbi Elliot Dorf, in what ways do you consider this economic crisis a moral or a spiritual crisis of your own or of the culture we live in?
In several ways. I think, first of all, on a social level, what this has done is that it has raised real questions about our commitment to money as the central organizing feature of our lives, and to the extent that we are willing to get involved in very iffy and even maybe shady kinds of economic arrangements, the extent to which we put ourselves in debt, both as a society and as individuals, in order to get immediate pleasure from the things that we buy with our indebtedness. And that certainly is true on state levels and on a federal level as well as on individual levels. I think it very much calls into question our devotion to money and to luxuries, mm-hmm. and our inability in past years to take responsibility for to buy those things that we have money for, and to go into debt only for long-term goods like houses and things like that.
And where do you see the spiritual aspect of that?
Well, because idolatry, which is one of the things that the Torah, that the Bible is most against, doesn't just mean bowing down to idols. It means putting in the center of your life that which is only a proximate good or a partial good, rather than ultimate goods like God and family and health and education and provision for the poor and so on. Right? No, those are ultimate goods, as opposed to money, which is only an instrumental good. And so, I think the spiritual piece of that is that what we're seeing is the result of some idolatry that we've been engaged in for the last 10 or 15 years, in putting money at the center rather than in putting some of these other more important things at the center.
Mm-hmm. And as this crisis continues to unfold, what are the resources or even the spiritual qualities or virtues that you bring to approaching it? Again, in your own life or with colleagues at work, in your family, or in your religious community?
Well, I think some of the resources are specifically religious, and some of them are economic and social. Let me start with the latter first.
Okay.
I'm a past president of Jewish Family Service of Los Angeles, and among the 60-some programs that we run are homeless shelters and food pantries. And we've seen the demand for those services absolutely skyrocket over the last year. And, of course, the resources for providing for those services, many of which came from the state and federal governments in the past, are drying up. And so basically what we have had to do is go to individual donors and to the community at large and say, look, we have to, in this kind of an economic crisis, we have to pull together as a community to try to serve those in need. And there are more and more of them. Some of the very people who used to donate are now on the lines asking for food, and looking for jobs. Some of the people who used to give other people jobs are now looking for jobs themselves. So, I think part of it is that this can't be only a spiritual thing. It has to be a very practical thing in that we have to pull together as a community and begin to take care of those in need. But then there also is very much the spiritual side to it, which is that after it's all said and done, why would you do this? I mean, you would do this because we are required by our tradition to love your neighbor as yourself, Leviticus chapter 19. We are required by the Torah to help the poor and the needy. And the Jewish tradition in particular says that the best way that you help a poor person is that you give that person a job or you invest with that person. I mean, you have to provide for the immediate needs, but ultimately, you preserve the dignity of the person in need most by enabling that person to get out of need. And so we have to start looking for how we get people back to work and how we get people in position, you know, retrain people if that needs to happen in order to be able to get them jobs. So, I mean, I think the spiritual part of it comes out of our deep connections with each other that our traditions try to foster. And on the demand of God, as the Bible sees it, that we take care of each other. And I think those kinds of spiritual lessons that come out of the Bible, and in our case, the later rabbinic tradition, you know, really have to come to the fore now. And we have to, this is a kind of put up or shut up situation, frankly. Mm. I mean, we can't just be, you know, giving lip service to this anymore, to these ideals and to these aspirations. We've got to act.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, you know, there are few of us who are not directly involved and suffering some kind of consequence. For certain people, the consequences are certainly harder and more difficult. I still have a job, for example. I haven't opened my pension fund report. I've been, you know, advised by all the experts not to, and I'm with them, you know?
Yes.
But so we all are experiencing it in different ways, and we've had layoffs in my company. I know that there are many of us who resist anxiety on a daily basis and are struggling with guilt and grief.
Yes.
What in your life, what are you doing personally that is different, and how are you managing through this uncertain time for all of us?
Actually, just in, I think it was just a day or two ago, there was a long article in the Los Angeles Times precisely about this, namely that the problem is not only for those people who have lost their jobs and are in physical need. The problem is for those who still have their jobs and who are feeling all kinds of, it's called survivor guilt. That is, you know, why is it that I still have a job and friends of mine still don't? I mean, I'm happy that I have a job, but I'm also feeling guilty about the fact that I'm happy about it. And then, of course, there are also the other issues, and namely, how much can I expect myself to do? I mean, what is a reasonable expectation? I can't resolve all of the problems of the world. So what is you can go absolutely crazy in terms of that if you have that kind of an expectation of yourself. So, I mean, I think part of what those of us who still have jobs have, and by the way, those of us that still have jobs have, part of what we need to do is to remind ourselves that there are a lot of people who don't have jobs. And so in my own instance, in at the American Jewish University where I work, there's been a 6% salary cut as of January, rather because the university either had to do that or start laying off people. And I think we were all agreed that rather than have to lay off people, we should all take salary cuts for the time being, and hopefully that will change over time. And there may be yet more salary cuts to come. But one of the things is that, you know, we have to do our bit to try to preserve people's jobs. Another thing, I mean, is that we have to realize that if you have a job, it's not because you did something wrong. It's because, you know, the way that things worked out, you either had seniority or you had greater skills or something on that order, and it's in many ways, you know, it deters you from really doing important things, both at your job and in also helping other people, if you continue to have these kinds of guilt feelings. I think what you really have to do is say, look, you know, life is not fair. And in many ways, maybe somebody else should have the job rather than I, but that's not the way it is. And what I really need to do is stop worrying about myself so much and try to focus on doing my job well and trying to help others get jobs and get the food and clothing they need and housing they need if they don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically get out of yourself, right?
Yeah.
That's basically what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And start thinking about others. And it's, you know, one of my favorite poems is one that I happen to have seen. It was anonymous. I was in my dentist's office and waiting for my appointment, and it was, I think, in Reader's Digest. And it said, I sought my God I could not see. I sought myself eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three.
Mm.
And I don't know who. I mean, it was anonymous, according to the Reader's Digest at the time. But
yeah.
I think that's exactly what the message needs to be for us as well. Namely, we really have to stop thinking about ourselves so much. And even seeking God is an important thing, and it can give people strength. But in the end, what we really need to do is to try to do our jobs well, and to try to think about how we can help others.
You know, get out of ourselves. It could be in and of itself that charge could be a description of any number of spiritual paths. It seems to be at the heart of most of them, doesn't it?
Right, I think it is. I mean, I think a large part of what religion is about is our connections to others. As a matter of fact, the very word means that. The L-I-G and the word religion comes from the same Latin root from the word ligament, which is connective tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when a woman has had as many children as she wants, she has a tubal ligation. That means she has her tubes tied. What religions do, among other things, is that they give you a picture of how you're tied, how you're connected to the members of your family, to the members of your community, to the larger human community, to the environment, and also to the transcendent element of human experience, which in the Western traditions we image as God. And what the various religions of the world are trying to do in various ways is get us out of ourselves and see ourselves in connection to other people, in connection to the environment, in connection to God. So I think at the very heart of even the very meaning of the word religion, let alone the messages of the various religions of the world, is to get out of ourselves in order to find ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I think you've been answering this next question, which is the last question, but I'm going to put it more directly. What kind of wisdom and leadership are you, Elliot Dorff, looking for right now, and where do you find it?
I think part of the wisdom I'm looking for is in an area that I know nothing about, namely economics.
Mm-hmm.
I think my son, who does know something about it, says that everybody who's talking about this now is guessing that this current economic situation is completely unprecedented, and we don't really know what the best way is out of this current crisis. And so I really wish that the science of economics were better than it is, frankly, and that we would have a clear understanding of what went wrong and how we can fix it. But as a philosopher, I know that life doesn't come with certainties, that there are very few things in life that are certain, and that when you're dealing with things that are uncertain and that are new, as this situation is, that what you have to do is try to find out the most wisdom that you can from the people who know something about it, and then do your best to try to change the situation according to your best lights. And even though you know you might fail, even though you know that it's not certain that what you're going to do is going to work, you do the best that you can to figure out what's wrong and to try to figure out how to fix it. And knowing full well that there may be very different opinions by experts in the field. It's the same sort of thing that happens with a lot of illnesses for people, where there are certain things that are pretty clear as to what you should do for certain illnesses and other things that are not clear. And, you listen to the experts and you do the best that you can. So part of the wisdom that I'm looking for is frankly just economics. And another part of the wisdom that I'm looking for is how do we get people to recognize how important it is now more than ever to try to take care of others, to try to get out of themselves and look at what people need and try to do what you can. That doesn't mean that you have to solve everything. You can't solve everything. One of my favorite sayings in the Jewish tradition is that of Rabbi Tarfon in the Mishnah, which is Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor velo ata ben chorin lihibatel mimena. You don't have the duty to finish the task, but neither are you free to desist from it. So you don't. You shouldn't feel. I think that's a recipe for sanity, frankly, as well as responsibility. You shouldn't feel that that it's all or nothing. Either I'm going to really fix this world, or otherwise I'm not going to do anything. That's definitely what you should not do. Don't think that you have the duty to fix this world, because if you do, then that's just going to make you depressed and you're not going to do anything. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that you are completely free from any responsibility for doing what you can do. in order to try to make things better for people. And I think what we really need to do, I think that piece of rabbinic wisdom is really central at this point in our lives. We really have to try to think about what we can do to help others, knowing full well that we're not individually going to be able to solve the whole problem.
Hmm. Rabbi Elliot Dorf, thank you so much for taking the time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to Rabbi Elliot Dorf of the American Jewish University in Los Angeles. This is Repossessing Virtue, speaking of faith's continuing exploration of the economic crisis. For more, subscribe to the SOF podcast and visit us at speakingoffaith.org.